Well, good day, everybody. This is Alan Carpenter of Tomahawk Take. We're going to do the Tomahawk Take podcast today, and we're doing it with a two-man crew today. Since we've let Jake go off on a rehab assignment somewhere in the minor leagues, I'm not sure where, but we'll sort that out whenever we can find him. But in any case, this is Alan, and I still have my senior writer here as cohort, Fred Owens.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
And we're going to try and see if we can muddle through this together and talk about some Braves baseball and other things today. This week is a particularly interesting and special week, though, and we don't want to let that go by unnoticed, and that is the fact that we have the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks coming up Saturday, the day that we'll probably have this thing on the air to y'all. Fred and I are of a generation and age where we remember this fairly vividly. And one thing I do want to say is that if you're, say, under 30 years old, perhaps you remember some things about it. But I want to encourage you to find some resources and information about the attacks, because this was a definite day of reckoning in the United States where a lot of things changed. We had a shutdown of our air travel for over a week. I can personally vividly remember staring outside of the sky and it's like, there's no planes flying. And I was in North Carolina at the time, sort of the glide path near Greensboro and its airport. And, you know, planes were common and it was quiet. It was silent. It was an empty sky, and that continued to stick with me. Travel was not encouraged at all at that time. People kind of got back home any way they could for a while, because pretty much the United States shut everything down. You can liken it to what we've been through last year with the COVID situation, except it was entirely different, really, because it was a man-made attack on the United States that brought all this together. Baseball, of course, shut down as well. They shut down for about 8 or 9 days over that period. The Braves, I believe, were either in Philadelphia or playing Philadelphia at the time of the attacks. Those games were made up at the end of the season, but for a while there, things were shut down. And you're hearing a lot this week, I'm sure, of the fact that the Braves played a role when they came back, because the first game that actually occurred in New York after the attacks and after things were restored was the Braves going to play the Mets in Shea Stadium. And it was an interesting, surreal kind of a event. I know that the Braves lost that game, of course, but as it turns out, it seemed like the Braves had a little bit of a difficulty getting themselves back up to play again once things got started again. On September 17th, they played their first game back. It was at Philadelphia. They lost that. They lost the next two. Finally salvaged one game in that series against the Phillies on September 20th before they went to New York to face the Mets. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Mets at the time. That was kind of important in terms of baseball standings, maybe not so much in the bigger picture about what was going on in the world at the time. But the Braves, just before 9/11, were up 3.5 games, leaders of the division. And by Monday, September 24th, they were tied because they weren't getting things going after things restarted. That changed, and they did manage to come up with enough wins to eke out a division title by 2 games at the end. And they ended up losing in the NLCS to the eventual World Series champs, Arizona Diamondbacks, that year. But, Fred, with that as a backdrop and an intro, let me see what you remember and continue to think about those days 20 years ago.
Well, you know, I live near a little airport, too. It's called Dyess Air Force Base, and those planes weren't grounded. They were flying constantly during that time. See, that was the summer I had a small accident. I fell through my roof, and I was kind of stove up anyway. And I remember that I had contractors coming because to fix the roof that I had fallen through, and that I was sitting there sort of in my jammies, if you will, when this came on, and I watched the planes fly into the towers, and my stomach churned, and I saw the space shuttle disaster, and between that and I can't watch that video either. The twin towers going down, and then the plane in DC, and the other one in Pennsylvania. It was for me as a military guy. My first call was to Florida to see if I could grab a uniform and go do something. They told me I didn't have enough time left before mandatory retirement, which is probably right. I'd probably been in the way anyway. But it was, you talk about a ball game when the opposing team just hits a home run and just sucks the air out of the ballpark. This event sucked the air out of the country.
Yeah.
There was I knew firefighters. I know a lot of firefighters who went. I know a lot of damage recovery folks. That's my background is fire protection. And I know a lot of damage recovery folks. I know the team that went to San Francisco when Candlestick had the earthquake. And I know that they were in New York, and I know other guys from that were in the business when I was in the business were there, doing things I couldn't possibly do, but I watched it unfold. And then I just can't watch the video again. It's too big of a gut punch, I guess, for me. Maybe I'm just getting old. I remember that Chipper said that he was on the field and they had the 21 gun salute and stuff on the field, and he picked up the brass, and he still got that as his memento of the game. And that he and Piazza were talking. I heard on one of the interviews today that Piazza was bawling like a baby at the pregame ceremonies and the hugs and things that were going on. And and then he turns around and does his Superman act and hits the home run and wins it for the Mets, which was probably fitting. If a city needed it, anything, that was what they needed. And the Braves didn't give anything up. Piazza earned that. Steve Carsey said that just ran just enough over the plate for him to get the bat on it. When he hit it, I knew it was gone. So it's one of these things that I pray no one ever has to see this again. I've seen a little bit of this, and when you see and you know that there's thousands of people in those buildings in the surrounding area that are not coming out. And there's just, and it's a horribly helpless feeling for a first responder knowing that first responders were in the building and aren't coming out. So baseball is one of the things that brings the country back together. It did it during the Second World War. It did it during Korea. They continued playing during Vietnam. And when, when they started the thing up again, it started to feel like, okay, it isn't normal, but this is pretty close. And it was an event that, I can't imagine being in the ballpark that night. I can imagine a lot of things, but I can't put myself in that position. And it was just, it was one of baseball's finest hours, if you will. Because not only did that happen, but then the World Series, the Yankees, and President Bush is there at Yankee Stadium, and he goes down and warms up underneath and says, I'm not going to go out there and look like a fool when I throw this pitch. I'm going to throw a strike. And he goes out there wearing a bulletproof vest and a coat. And if you've ever had one of those on, it's not easy, and he threw a strike. Now, I don't know whether George Bush could do that 10 out of 100 times, but he did it that night. And it was needed that night. And so I think it was, in the aftermath was one of baseball's finest hours and one of the things that no other sport could do. So that's where I'm at on this whole thing.
Yeah, XM radio, if you guys have a chance to hear that at all in any way, Sirius XM radio is doing a series of podcasts about this and baseball's role in the return, the recovery of the country, really. There are lots of things that I think have stood out here. The fact that baseball players, the Mets, the Yankees, both were going around the city of New York in the days that followed just to try and be with people and give them a sense of comfort and caring, and they were very well received. This was
Shea Stadium was a staging area for the recovery efforts. As a matter of fact, ambulances, portable morgues, all the recovery, rest and recovery for the crews was Shea Stadium was a big part of that. And,
yeah, so this wasn't just symbolic. This was, you know, substantive that baseball was involved in the recovery, and it, as I say, I think it was well received, very well received. A lot of things changed, and the reason we mark this date is because there are things that are different now because of what happened those days. We've got things like the TSA monitoring your entrances to airports. We've got things like no fly lists. We've got stars on our driver's license to say we've been identified and certified and such. And there's more coming with that. The things are different now. We've got a phrases like 9/11, you say that and everybody knows what you mean. And when you've got things like that, that happen, that are historic markers in time, it serves to help us all to remember them and remember what happened, remember why they happened, and continue to be vigilant about things like that in future. I work on a military base. There's guys that do, you know, checks all the time. Every now and then they'll have a particularly dangerous situation that they're made aware of, and suddenly the security measures ramp up significantly. All of that happened after 9/11 as well.
Dias is on increased alert now.
So you've got a lot of this kind of stuff that continues because of what happened there. And it, as I say, it serves us all well to understand what these things are and to recognize what happened and to understand that we've got a different future and a different present as a direct result. With that, I'll stop there because there's a whole lot of people who are doing a whole lot better job of talking about that than we can in this forum. But we do want, like say, to make sure that didn't go unnoticed. We did have some other things going on, some things that in the news that were encouraging and some things that are sort of interesting. Let me start with the encouraging part, and that note from John Heyman this morning that the Braves and Freddie Freeman's representatives are talking, and they're talking about a contract extension. However, the less encouraging part of that was that allegedly they are some distance apart, and that's concerning because Heyman's thinking that this might carry on into a free agency situation for Freeman. Frankly, I don't know that that is still in the offing, but we are getting obviously towards the end of the season, and if we don't get something done in the next couple weeks, my suspicion is that they're going to shut things down until after the playoffs, or at least till the end of the season one way or another. And at that point, then we are at a free agency situation. So it's going to be close. It's going to be tight, but we know that the Braves can do these things. We just recently got Travis d'Arnaud re-upped for next year. We got Charlie Morton re-upped for next year in what I think was a brilliant move. And we'll just hope that he's as good next year, or at least in the neighborhood of as good this next year as he is this year. But Fred, what do you think about what we heard today about negotiations with Freddie Freeman?
Well, I watched the MLB Network broadcast of a Braves game last week when Ron Darling was on there, and Darling said exactly that. He said he heard that Freeman and his people and the Braves were a long way apart on the money, and that they couldn't get closer. They were having trouble getting close with the money, and that he sort of felt that Freddie was going to end up hitting free agency. Or at least he implied that, whether he said those exact words or not. That was my take on what he said. And then this morning when Heyman comes out, and I'll say this again, I take everything John Heyman says with a grain of salt and two aspirin, okay? Because, yeah. Because his sources are sometimes flaky. But it does fit. I mean, you look at what the Braves did. They re-upped Darno two years, eight apiece. They gave Charlie 20 and an option for 20 after that. If he wants to retire, he can. Otherwise, he'd come back and play for 20. And there's a good reason for doing that, too. If you let Charlie hit free agency, he's probably going to retire because the only two teams that he wants to play for that would give him that kind of money are the Rays and us. And the Rays aren't going to give him $20 million. The Marlins certainly aren't going to do that with their stable of young pitchers. So the Braves said, look, Charlie, let's take this decision off your hand. We'll give you $20 million for next year and an option for 20 after that. And Charlie said, well, hey, I don't have to make that decision. Let me talk to my wife. Everything's fine. So, Charlie was on television during that broadcast telling Darling that he made any decision about this was a family thing. So he apparently had talked to his lady wife, and they decided that, yes, this was a good thing. He liked being in Atlanta. It was close to home. Now, you look at them doing that, and they gave Charlie 20, and they guaranteed him another 20 and an option, and they paid Darno a nice $8 million as a guy who's going to end up being a backup catcher for them. And you look around the infield, and you say, okay, Riley's sewed up. Swanson's there. He's going to make 10. Ozzie sewed up. Acuna's coming back. You know, Stephen Vogt just hit another home run.
I think he needs to retire after this game. He's just hit his second.
it's a career night for him. Anyway, and you look at that and you say, well, clearly the Braves are flexing their money. Okay, they've got the money. They're trying to settle things down so they don't have any big things to do in the offseason. Why hadn't Freddie done? Well, clearly they're far apart on the money. Darling said that he heard that Freddie wanted Goldschmidt money and a little more, and that makes sense. On the show this morning, he said, he should get Goldschmidt's money, and then he's going to say, hey, and I've been MVP 2 years in a row, or an MVP 1 year, and I'm in the running for an MVP this year, and I should get a little more than Goldschmidt. And we all agree on that. We're thinking 5 or 6 years at 180 is probably a good year. 7 years, 180 is a good number. If you want to do that for him, because the way he hits the ball, the way he plays the game, he's not going to fall off a cliff like Rizzo's done. And at the same time, Fangraphs today had the unmitigated gall to suggest 4 years and $80 million, which is absolutely ridiculous. And I don't recommend the article simply because there's at least three factual errors in the article beside that ridiculous conclusion. So if that's the kind of thing we're talking about, if they've looked at this and said, well, look, we'll give you $100 million for 4 years or 5 years, that's not good enough. He's carried the team for years. He's not going to fall off. Give him the damn money, because if you don't give him the money, you need to pack and head for Canada, Alex.
Hint for the Fangraphs people, he's already making 22, okay? He's not going to take 20.
No,
and he's not going to take 22, even.
Well, I said to him, you know, you're going to – okay, what's your plan B? You let Freddie walk and he signs with the Angels or the Giants, who both need a first baseman and both have big pockets. So he signs with the Angels and Giants. How do you replace him? The answer is you can't. The only first baseman worthy salt out there is Rizzo. And, you know, Rizzo's a nice player, but he can't carry Freddie's boots. I'm sorry. He just can't. And you're taking away not only the bat and the person and the presence, but you're taking away the icon. The team is built around Freddie. I know that it's built around Acuna and it's built around Albies, but it's really built for Freddie. And, you know, all this mexing around and tittle-tattling money here and tittle-tattling money there, that's just crazy. There's nothing on the books next year. Pay the man. Give me 28 a year for 7 years. I'm sure he'd be happy with the extra year and the extra 28. And if you want to front load it so that you can run the dollars out and, you know, do whatever you got to do to make the thing work long term. But give the man a contract, Alex. Quit tiddling around and playing tiddlywinks here. You know you're going to do it, too, because you want to keep your job. And if you don't, you can't.
Let me go ahead and read the Hammond tweet here. He says, no numbers have surfaced. This is the second tweet. No numbers have surfaced, but the most obvious comp is Paul Goldschmidt, who at age 31, where Freddie is now, got $130 million for 5 years. That's $26 million a year. Goldie was similarly great before that deal, but Freeman, also 31, has a case that he's the most decorated in MVP, more iconic, and maybe even a little bit better, which is all the kinds of things you were saying. So, yeah, 26 is probably the floor. 30 is probably, I think, would certainly be the Braves' ceiling. I don't know if Freddie's looking for something more than that, but I would hope not.
I think he would like years more than money. I mean, I think you've got to give him
right.
26. I think if you give him 28 for 6 years, or 27 for 7 years, as long as you give him time, let him do what Chipper did, retire as a Brave.
Yep.
And let him go out and pay him what he's earned. If you want to put incentives in it, that's fine. I don't care how you do this, but please, people, $28 million, it's not going to break this club for a guy who's been an MVP. Almost an MVP, and carried this team when the team had no one else. Paid the man.
Yeah, what I've been suggesting has been that $28 million level, 5 or 6 years plus option, 1 or 2 or 3, something like that, to carry him along as long as he wants to play, basically. If 26 is indeed the floor, and you got to look at that Goldschmidt contract as a true floor, because That's an obvious comp. Anybody can figure that out. If the Braves are in at 26, then how far – I got to wonder how far apart they could really be, to be honest. It's got to be years, I suppose, but $10 million apart or $20 million apart is only a couple million per year. So that can't be that bad, really, it sounds like. So – yeah, I'm with you. 28 million, 5 or 6 years, that should do it, you'd think. And I would think both sides should come together on something in that order. But we will see. I'm a little surprised at the conclusion that Heyman reaches, which is apparently echoing what Ron Darling said. So I'm curious as to where this is going to go. But my suspicion is we've got a couple weeks at the most, because if they're talking now, they want to get this wrapped up before playoffs begin. So we need to get something done pretty soon here.
If they don't, they've got that 5-day quiet period. But I'm going to tell you, if you get to that 5-day quiet period,
that's
he's
way
gonna
too
hit
close.
Free agency.
Yeah.
He's going to hit free agency, and the Angels and the Giants and the Yankees are going to be there with checkbooks saying, hey, oh, we're not scared to pay you.
Yeah. Yeah. So you do not want to get in that situation where he's a week away from true free agency. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what we come up with here. But like I say, I think we're in a situation where the next 2 weeks determine whether we see Freddie Freeman in a Braves uniform after this year. But speaking of other players that we probably don't want to see in a Braves uniform again, we had some news today about Marcell Ozuna and how he's going with the legal process associated with his domestic battery charges. And Fred, I'll let you take off on this a bit to start with. But this is kind of interesting and a little bit concerning in terms of the direction we're going to have to go from this point.
They haven't said they're not going to charge him with anything, but he's agreed to go into a diversion plan, which is essentially an anger management plan, an anger management program. It's 6 months worth of training and reeducation and various kinds of things that are supposed to get his mind right and get him ready to go back and become a productive member of society. And, you know, that's going to take a minimum of 3 months. If he's a good boy and he does everything on time in the first 3 months, they could let him out then, which would be well after the season's over. And at that point, you'd expect MLB to come in and say, aha, well, we don't have that burden of proof and we're going to suspend you. And I hope it's at least a year. Manfred has the opportunity to drop the hammer on him and let Trevor Bauer know what's coming. And I think he could drop the hammer on him for more than a season, because Sam Dyson got a year that got a 162 game, or got a 2021 suspension because he was verbally abusive, kicked a carrier with a cat in it, and left bruises on the lady's arm, and MLB suspended him for a year. Of a full season. I would not be surprised to see MLB give Ozuna more than a season. I don't ever expect to see him wear a Braves uniform again. I think that there's a case for Liberty Media to step forward when his suspension does finish, then say, hey, look, we don't want this guy working for us. We know what he can do. We don't have those people in our company, and we're just going to pay this off. Now, maybe I'm daydreaming, but it's an awfully good PR move for Liberty Media if they were to do such a thing. You know, even if they don't, at that point, maybe the new CBA does something to offer relief and a job to people to teams who have somebody like this who acts out and does something really despicable and hurts a lady, or a spouse or a significant other or a child. There's one of my friends flipped out a note to me tonight that, domestic violence abusers have a 30% recidivism rate, which means they're going to do it again. And this isn't the first time. I know it was supposed to be his wife the last time, but still, there's two people involved in this, and I just don't think the Braves will have him play for him again. I think one way or another, once the suspension's gone, he's done. But it's not going to be this year. It'll be after the postseason because of the decision, and he'll have to serve his time after that. And once he's done that, then the commissioner can come out and say what he's going to do. But Manfred's got the Bauer thing in front of him. And you know he's going to drop the hammer on Bauer. He has to. And to do that, he's got to send a message with Ozuna that he means it just as well. And frankly, Sam Dyson kicked a cat and grabbed the lady's arm and bruised her. He didn't pick her up by the neck and throw her against the wall, even if Ozuna's lawyer said that Ozuna didn't do that. He's alleged to have done that. I'll say that to keep them from suing me. But, I you know, even the officer says that's what he did, and I believe that cop. If you kicking a cat gets you a year, that ought to get you more than a year, in my opinion. I don't know. I can't say to that, but I don't think we'll see him in a Braves uniform again. I don't think the players want him there. I know the fans don't want him there. And, and go give him his money and let him go off and work in Mexico or Taiwan or somewhere, and get away from here, because I don't want him on my baseball field.
All right, let me start here with the sort of particulars that are involved here. Ozuna has a 4-year deal plus an option with the Braves. It pays him $12 million this year. It looks like he's going to get that entire salary for this year because he's on he's not even on administrative leave. He's still essentially on the injured list. They haven't done what they've done with Bauer and put him on the administrative leave list. But in any case, he's still a inactive member of the Atlanta Braves today, and he's going to get his $12 million. This contract was backloaded. $16 million in 2022, $18 million in both 2023 and 2024. So there's still a considerable amount of money on the books there that the Braves are still on the hook for. I am with you. You raised the question about the CBA, and this has been one of my pet peeves for a while. I do not like to see these guys who are accused of crimes or domestic violence or anything nefarious like that brings ill repute to the sport of baseball. I do not like to see these guys rewarded effectively, getting their money despite the fact that they've done bad things. Yet we've continued to be seeing that. I think the highest amount to date is Jose Reyes, who was paid $40 million by the Colorado Rockies to go away. For some reason, the Mets decided to hire him later, but that, you know, that's up to
the
them.
Mets, okay. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, they're Metsing again. But that's a $40 million hit that the Colorado Rockies had to absorb. And it wasn't their fault. They weren't the perpetrators. They're effectively another victim of the crime. And I don't like to see teams have to eat so much money in a contract. And I would like to see that the CBA get changed. And by golly, we're negotiating that this fall and into December when we're supposed to have a new one here. That might be a great way for the owners to get a little bit of a change here. We've talked about, we've certainly heard about the fact that the players union is the strongest union in sports. This is one of the reasons, is because they continue to defend the contracts of guys like this who commit crimes, who commit domestic violence, and they end up getting their money one way or another. It would be a heck of a PR move on the side of the players union if they were to stand up and say, you know what, we're not going to support this anymore, we're not going to back these guys, we're going to allow Major League Baseball and teams to cancel contracts or severely reduce the financial obligations, at least, of these contracts for guys who do terrible things. We're going to let them kick them to the curb. That would be the right thing to do. And if that were done, I think that we would hardly have any incidents like this in the future. But yet you still continue to get one or two of these every year, it seems like. And that's still a black eye on the sport, especially when you end up paying the guys to go away in the end. You know, today it's this $36 million due to Ozuna in 2023 and 24. I suspect he's going to be suspended at least for 2022, and he's going to lose the $16 million there. But then the Braves would be, in theory, on the hook for $36 million to pay him to go away in 2023. So this year it's that. Next year it'll be Trevor Bauer and his millions from the Dodgers. Now, yeah, the Dodgers got the money. Nobody's going to cry for them if they have to do that. But at the same time, I think there's a principle involved that you don't want to reward bad behavior. And that's exactly what I'm ranting about here, is that we continue to reward bad behavior. And if the Players Association and the ownership groups get together and put this in the CBA that you can change these contracts and get rid of players like this, then I think the sport would be much better for it.
The union can't just say we're not going to defend them, because the union's position is to defend. Okay.
Right.
Now, I think that there is a case for putting some kind of deferred payout to these things where, you know, you pay it out over 30 years or something, and he still gets his money a dribble and drabble at a time. That doesn't kill the team. You know, that if you go out and say, well, they're going to abandon the contract, I don't know that the union would ever give the team the right to void a contract completely, because that would set a terrible precedent for them.
But you could put in specific language that addresses specific situations, whether it's drug use or felonies or domestic violence or what have you. You could put language in there that says that under these conditions, whatever they may be, narrowly defined as you want to do it, you could make these things go away. And I would like
Tony
to see
Clark,
that.
I don't think Tony Clark and Rob Manfred get along well enough to do that. I don't. I honestly think a lot of this depends on the way that the two sides work together. And as much as I dislike Bub Selig as a commissioner, at least he and Donald Fehr worked together and did things that I'm sure that, Clark wouldn't have approved of had he been doing them. But I think I just feel like you need goodwill on both sides for this. And I don't know that there's any way of I would certainly sign up for giving them the kick, but I don't think the union can afford to come out and say that simply because that's not what a union does. Unless he goes to jail. If he goes to jail, then the union's going to let you punt him because they have no grounds. But if the police don't make it a felony, then, you know, you're stuck with the suspensions and things like they are. And I think the way you do that, you let them reduce the contract or at least extend the payout. If you release Ozuna, then you pay out the rest of that money at $3 million a year. And I don't care if it takes 20 years to get it. He's going to get his money, and maybe there's a little interest in that. But still, it doesn't break the team. And that's the point. You're taking a job. You're saying, well, I'm giving away this money, and I can't use that money to buy another player. And you know that this guy's supposed to be gone, and I want somebody in there who I can play another one of your guys that's going to get this money, and you have to figure it out that way. Now, I'm not sure that the union would jump in on that, but I think there is a case for doing something to mitigate the damage to the teams because, yeah, you're right. The Dodgers can afford it. The Yankees, they can afford it. The Phillies can probably afford it. Maybe even the Giants can afford it, but most other teams cannot. And when you hang out there with a team that's got a $36 million on, you know, you can hire three really good players $36 million a year. And I just think the small market teams suffer in this, and they end up with it because, the Rockies got it because they wanted to get rid of Tulowitzki's contract. But in the end, It was just a bad deal for Reyes. And I don't know, you know, why the Mets took him back other than they're the Mets. And I just don't think, I don't want to put a man out of his business. Okay. I'm not saying he can't work. I just don't want him working for me.
And honestly, though, in most cases, this isn't about whether they'll be able to survive without being a soup line.
They're not
obviously.
Broke.
They're not broke. They just have essentially ceded the responsibility they have as baseball players to be good citizens as well. And I'm still curious as to how this is going to go in the CBA because both sides always look for something that they can use as a negotiating chip. And this certainly would be something that the union could offer up to get something at once. So it's something that I want to keep eyes on because this is making a lot of news and it's making the kind of news that neither side really wants to see. And there's a lot of money involved and that immediately makes me think that it could come up. As far as that goes, both sides are in fact doing face-to-face negotiations now, which is both surprising and good news at the same time. So they're getting started early. Obviously, they want to take the low-hanging fruit in terms of their negotiations early and do the hard stuff later. But the fact that they're even talking at this stage, I think, is good and maybe hopefully has some hope of getting an agreement without getting too far down the road of animosity that we saw last year, certainly. But that's what we see with Marcell Ozuna, and hopefully, I think I speak for Fred and really Jake too as well, that we don't see Marcell Ozuna in a Braves uniform anymore. We hang on to guys like Jorge Soler, who just homered again. So the Braves have retaken the lead. We're watching the Nationals game on Thursday as we're doing this. So if we get distracted, sorry, but we're fans first. So that's what we got. Other things that we got before try to wrap things up, the Braves have not exactly been on point lately since they did their mad rush to first place. Obviously, playing games against the Giants and Dodgers and even the Rockies at home, at least they went 2-2 there. That was actually pretty good. But the Braves have been a little bit less than stellar last few days, and it comes back to things like pitching and some offense that seems to be dependent on the homers like it is tonight. Fred, what do you got on that?
Well, for a long time, the Giants had the lead, the most runs scored by home runs by a team. But, night before last, the Braves took that lead away from, okay, it's decimal points. We're talking, the Braves have a, 54.3% of their home runs come from home runs. The Giants 54.14. There are four teams with over 50%. The other two teams are the Cubs and the Mets, and they're not going to do anything. When you look at the Dodgers, they're down to 48. The Brewers are at 48. The Padres are at 44. The real thing that's interesting to me is that, okay, if you're going to hit homers and win games with home runs like Soler's trying to do that tonight, you have to find out how to win those other games. And the reason that the Giants are leading their division by a couple of games over the quote, the best team in baseball and the best built team in baseball, which isn't looking that way right now, is that they win games where they don't hit home runs. And the Braves only win 25%, 26% of them. Everybody else wins 30 to 35% or more of those games. We have to figure out a way to win games where you don't hit home runs, because guess what? In the postseason, teams that get on base and score without hitting home runs win games, because you get less cookies to hit in postseason. And I just think, the Braves percentage is increasing. Tonight's going to increase it some more, and it's fine. You got to have home runs. You got to have a balanced lineup. We just haven't managed to do that. And saying that, the Braves have the highest batting average with runners in scoring position, the highest batting average runner in scoring position of two out in the league. They don't strike out as much as some of the other teams with runners in scoring position. And yet, the Giants are scoring more runs. So I'm not sure how this is all working out in San Francisco. I'm looking for the man behind the curtain, and I think it's got something to do with on-base percentage and balls in play and things like that. But honestly, the one thing that's always bothered me about this team is its inability to string about six or eight hits together two or three games in a row and just score runs that way without worrying about, oh, well, it's the ninth and two inning, two out. Can Ozzie hit a home run for us? Because that doesn't, a home run once every 10 at bats or something like that. They don't happen a lot in the ninth inning. And it's just awfully hard to live and die by the home run. Washington, Wash knows about that. He was with the Rangers for years. And that's the way the Rangers got the postseason. And it's just, you need them, but you don't want them to be the only thing you can do. And right now, that is essentially the only thing the Braves do, because, they're 8-22 when they don't hit a home run. 8-22. And that's not changing tonight. So, you in the postseason, you give the best pitchers are out there. You're seeing the number one starter, the number two starter. They got days off, they rest. They run the big guys out of the bullpen. They put extra starters in the bullpen, and it gets really tough. So, I'm not saying the team can't do it, but I sure wish they'd do it more often.
Yeah, and in the playoffs, you get guys like Max Scherzer, who only gets better when you get runners in scoring position or runners on base or two outs and things like that. So it's a, immovable force against a, where's the other object? You push and you shove, and you can't find the kinds of pitches that you normally would hit out of the park in such situations. That's what it really comes down to. But yeah, you're absolutely right that this is not a recipe for success in a playoff situation. And you're going to run up against teams, Milwaukee and the Dodgers in particular, and the Giants less so lately, but still are somewhat formidable there, that are going to be pitching quite well. And I think the Braves are going to be a little bit in danger there if they don't manage to shut down the offenses of these teams themselves with their own pitching. And right now we've got two pitchers, Charlie Morton, Max Fried, who are definitely on point and still continuing to thrive. Even as we get late in the season, and frankly, that's exciting to me, considering that we were saying all the beginning of the season how these guys might be getting run down and start to have great difficulty staying with the innings as they increase their load for over 2020. But that may not be the case with some of these other guys. Ian Anderson, of course, Colorado may have messed him up, you know, as well. Tuki Toussaint was looking very good early on, not so much lately as well. And Drew Smyly, I think we both almost kind of given up on. But what's your take on what we've got in terms of the pitching rotation right now coming into these last 3 weeks of the season?
Well, you know, I think you pretty well got that. You've got Morton and Fried and Anderson. Yanoa, you're going to get what you get from Yanoa. I mean, basically, he's living a bubble right now. I'm not sure how long he can keep this up, but I'm all for him doing it for the rest of the year. I think the starters will get through it. I think, but the problem we've got is, boy, that bullpen's problematic. The Will Smith commercial with him pitching to a little leaguer is his ideal yeah. position. That's where he should be because he gives up home runs to everybody else. And I'm not sure Ella Bruning couldn't hit a home run off him out here. I don't trust him in the ninth inning. What's really bad is I don't trust anybody else in the ninth inning either. You know, you saw Matzik give it up. We've seen Mender give it up. We've seen Luke give it up. I wonder if we don't see Buller in the bullpen in the post, as we get close to the postseason. I wonder if we don't see Kyle Muller come up and that big arm of his in the bullpen. I wonder if you don't finally see Dylan Lee come up, who doesn't walk anybody and does strike people out, and for some reason hasn't had a shot yet when we've got Josh Tomlin on the roster and Drew Smyly out there serving up gopher balls. We found out Smyly can't start, and we found out he can't relieve. I think he's got to have that strained confidence muscle in his neck and go on the IL. I don't want him anywhere near the postseason roster. He was an $11 million dud. And he's going to be an $11 million dud, and I say that because this is a family broadcast. And he's going to be an $11 million dud for the rest of the year. He's a mistake, and you know he is. We just don't have anybody. When the Dodgers last year, when they wanted to close it out, who'd they bring in? Urias. They brought in Urias, a starter. Then when the Reds closed it out, and Kimbrel was struggling. Nate Eovaldi came in and closed it out. And you see these guys, and I don't like using starting pitchers in that rotation, but I just don't think our bullpen can do that consistently in the postseason with one-run games. I just every time Smith takes the mound, I cringe and reach for a bottle of whiskey because I don't think he's going to make it.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to end up relying on these guys, Morton and Fried, for extra innings in the postseason just to give these guys a chance to be successful in the bullpen. Cause I think you're right. Consistently, it seems that, if you have three or four innings to cover, somebody's going to give up the home run. Maybe two of them are going to give up the home run. And that's just untenable in the playoffs, considering you got teams like the Dodgers who are out there trying to exploit every little mistake that you make, and that is not going to be a recipe for success at all. The Braves are going to be set up for an early exit in the postseason if that happens, unfortunately. But, we've got a couple weeks left, yes, but I don't know if they have plans to bring Mueller up. I hope they do. I think he'd be a good candidate. You mentioned a couple other guys that we haven't seen the light of day with. But right now, if I'm Brian Snicker, I'm telling Alex Anthopoulos, look, you know, we've got a couple extra slots on the roster. You need to give me a rotating group of guys so I can see if there's anybody we can use to save our bullpen a little bit more here. And just give these guys some auditions because right now we need it. And I don't know that they can be any worse than what we're experiencing lately because we continue to see an offense that relies on the home runs and we see a bullpen that can't save a one or two run lead, it seems. So right now, coming down to the wire, it's going to be critical. The Phillies are getting ready to face the soft part of their schedule. The Braves are going to have a little tougher road to hoe next week or so. I think it's going to be very close to the end, and I think that the last week's series against the Phillies is going to end up being important, unfortunately. So we're going to need all the horses we can get. There is no doubt about that. Any other last words before we get out of here?
No, I think that'll. I think I've said enough for tonight.
If there's any question of whether we could fill in the space that Jake left, I think we've put that to bed. Fortunately,
yeah. Well, I think his wife sent him on assignment somewhere, but didn't tell us where. And you know, maybe she'll let him finish it up at some point. But yeah, he'll be back next week. Tell us what we did wrong, I'm sure.
That sounds good. All right. Well, we'll get out of here. Want to encourage y'all to subscribe to this podcast from your favorite subscription outlet. And thank you for taking a listen to these old guys that are trying to glean something interesting about baseball and the Atlanta Braves. We'll look forward to hearing from you in the comments when we post this on Saturday. And we thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
This has been the Tomahawk Take Podcast, a production of TomahawkTake.com and Fansided LLC, a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants, all rights reserved. Some of the musical selections used today come to you under the auspices of the Creative Commons license, terms of which are available at creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0. These were pieces written by Kevin MacLeod entitled Heartwarming, Continue Life, Autumn Day, and Sovereign. They were modified to fit in the available space. His works are featured at incompetech.filmmusic.io. And the other selections used come via rights purchase by TomahawkTake.com. I'm skipping the usual banter here today because this is a date to remember with soberness and vigilance. The further we get away from such dates, the more people tend to forget their impact, but we don't wish that to be the case. On December 7, 1941, for instance, the United States was attacked by the Empire of Japan. Shortly thereafter, the United States, with full resolve, unleashed its response in the Pacific Ocean, and later on the beaches of Normandy in Europe. On September 11, 2001, the United States was attacked by Islamic terrorists bent on punishing us for our way of life. In the years that followed, our response was relentless and unmistakable. The message through the history of this country is clear. If you attack one of us, you attack all of us, and you will be pursued to the ends of the earth in response. We are the United States of America, and we will not submit. That message remains today, and it is so that we can stand resolved to work hard, play hard, and enjoy the benefits of the freedom we have established. All of that includes our many sports and competitions. That allows us to root for our teams in all good fun, and no one can take that away from us. Go Braves!